Now, having said all that, let me share with you two practical ways to increase dialogue. Firstly, talk, don't just communicate. Too often, parents only ever talk to their children when they've got something important to communicate to them. Something to tell those children about what they shouldn't have done yesterday or need to do tomorrow. We need to learn to talk to our children the same way we talk to normal people. And this is to chat to them about things of everyday life and so forth, things of common interest and so forth. Some here have tried this with your children. Your son comes home from school. You say, "Hi, mate, how was your day?" "All right." "What did you do?" "Nothing." "You were there for 6 hours, must have done something, just stuff." "What sort of stuff?" "What's this, 20 questions or something?" I thought with my daughter, perhaps if I took an interest in those things that interested her, we'd be able to talk. So I stopped listening to talk on the radio and began to listen to music on the radio. We drive in the car and hear music come on the station. I thought I recognised. So I just said, "Was that Broken Watermelons?" She'd say, "Oh, Dad, it's Smashing Pumpkins. Get off, leave alone, such an idiot." It was very much worse when I called the Spice Girls the Nutmeg People. By the way, in this whole talking, not communicating, those questions that I've just illustrated there, quite seriously, in all my time working with teenagers, I found there's a range of things that parents do that really irritate their children. But one that sits on the highest of any teenager's list, or just about any teenager's list, the number one irritating thing that parents do, and I tested this out in the kids today, they agree, is that parents, which are your kids, parents of teenagers insist on asking their kids stupid questions. Questions for which there are obvious answers. The child has just got off the bus. It's in its school uniform. It has its school bag on its shoulder, its school shoes on its feet, and mum will say, "Hi, darling, what'd you do today?" "Went to school." The child is sitting down watching the OC. All the OC characters are on the screen. It has the OC written across the bottom of the screen. Dad will walk past and say,
What are you watching?
And the kid feels like saying, "Oh, can't you read, you stupid old man?" But it doesn't, because it's too polite. It goes, "Ugh." By the way, I did explain to your children today that the reason we do that is because all we want to do is say hello. We just want to hear their voice in a positive way. But what all of them have done in the last 3 years is convinced us that we're not allowed to ask any questions that are remotely personal. We're not allowed to pry. So what we think is, if I ask my child who's intelligent a question for which there's an obvious answer, my child will know I'm not trying to pry, I'm just saying hello. Now, I do need to make a confession here. I did give your children today a way to stop you ever again asking them what they should do in school today. Some may have had this tested on you, so I thought I'd better explain it. Okay. Who had a child to test this one out on them today? No? No? Okay. I said to your kids today, look, if you want to stop your mum ever again asking you that question, next time she asks it, you say, "Mum, it was fantastic. During biology, we studied human reproduction. And at lunchtime, we practiced." Yeah, sorry about that, yes. Yeah. Ah, well, it starts some conversation. Yeah. Now, we can't ask those questions, so what we do, the solution to this then, is to gossip. Gossip with your children. Now, I'm not suggesting you get down in the gutter and find some filth to spread around children's friends, but rather that you just change your approach. When your daughter comes home from school, instead of saying, "Hi, what did you do today?" or "How was your day?" you say, "Hi, that girl Wendy used to play hockey with. I haven't seen her for a while. What's she doing now?" Now, if your daughter says Wendy's pregnant with AIDS, you change the subject. But, you know, most of the time she's saying, "Oh, no, Wendy plays soccer now, so trains a different night," or "Wendy is a dag and a hater," or "Wendy's moved interstate." And suddenly, out of this child, from whom recently you had a few grunts, you now get a few sentences. Now, there's another side to this talking, not communicating. It's a bit more subtle. And it's this. I have noticed that, for some reason, parents often talk to their or chat to their children differently to the way we chat to our friends. Our casual conversation with our kids is on a totally different basis to the casual conversation we have with our friends. Parents tend, when we have casual conversation with our children, to only chat when we've got something nice to talk about. We chat about the nice things that are going to happen tomorrow, the nice things that happened yesterday, the nice things we saw on TV today. We chat about the nice stuff. But our casual conversation with our friends, our workmates, our colleagues, tends to be dominated by either trivialities like sport and politics, or by our concerns, our anxieties, our fears, and our worries. The knocking sound in the engine of the car. Interest rates are going up again. What's that going to mean for the mortgage? Did I go through the speed camera on the way to work? So we share, and of course there's always the one common theme we talk about at work, our complaint, our problem is our kids. So we share our perfection with our children and our frailty with our friends, and then we fail to understand why our children don't understand when we're frail. One of the most important things we can do in opening up dialogue with our kids is to be prepared to share with them some of our weakness. It's not always easy, and it doesn't have to be done all the time, but we should certainly be free to let our kids see us just a bit tender. To let us see us not being super mum, super dad, who can answer every question and solve every problem. Our kids live with us. They know that's not true. And we pretend it is not true. We pretend it is true. We pretend that we can do all these things, and we never let them into our lives. And so why should they bother talking to us? We're not that important to them. You know, when you think about it, in many ways, a relationship is sealed in the sharing of secrets. It's that point when you really want to tell someone you love them and you care for them that you open up and say, well, here, this is how much I love you. This is my weakness. This is my secret I'm sharing with you. And then suddenly you've bonded so much more. We need to share our secrets, some of them, with our kids. You mums here, you work really hard at work. You have a horrible day. The clients are horrible, the bosses works. You fight the traffic all the way home. You get home, you're tired, you're uptight, you're frustrated, but you don't want to dump this on your children. So you go about your business pretending everything is all right. Your children are smart. They'll see right through that. But they're also rotten little sods. They will not blame your horrible day at work. They'll just mutter to each other saying, look out, mum's all hormonal again. Dads are worse. Australian men, I know I generalise, but Australian men tend to feel that, you know, I must be strong, I must be dad, I must be right. Australian men tend to feel if I allow my child to see me weak, especially my boy child, my child will lose all respect for me. Nothing could be further from the truth. One of the greatest ways to engender the respect of your boy or even your girl is to allow them into your life, to be weak around them, to not always be strong. Maybe you need to let your 15-year-old tell you how to drive the car. Okay. You know, you can always get a new car. Let him set up the computer the way he wants it to run. It doesn't matter. Let him be the smart one. Take his advice sometimes, not all the time. But boys are trying to get their own confidence here. They're trying to establish themselves as men. And if you're constantly putting that boy down, it makes it harder for him to become a man. And then he's left with only one option to become a man, and that's to knock off the big bloke. So he's much more likely to fight if you're not giving him any opportunities to be at least as smart as you. It's hard. It's hard to be weak around your kids because we feel so threatened and we feel that they will lose respect. But it's amazing what doors that might open. If you can sometimes say to your son, mate, I don't know. Or mate, I'm just confused. Or mate, I wish I could make it different, but I can't. Or mate, I'm sorry. It is amazing the power of those kinds of words. I learnt this way. This is many years ago now, I'd been home for a fortnight in a row, which was unusual. What was not unusual was I'd left all the jobs I was supposed to do till the day before I left. And here I was running around Sunday afternoon trying to fix all my little chores. And one of the chores I was supposed to do was arrange for someone to come and repair the tiles on our roof because a couple were cracked and it was leaking. And this is a bad thing because back in the olden days when it still rained. So here I am ringing roof tiling people and no one was going to come out on the Sunday afternoon. So I did not trust the professionals who were going to come when I wasn't there. So I had to show them what was wrong. So I climbed into the roof to mark all the leaky parts. Made all these little circles in the roof, felt very proud of myself, made my way back towards the kitchen. Towards the manhole. Somewhere over the kitchen, I missed my footing. And instead of treading on the rafter, put my foot fair square in the middle of the plaster. Dropped 2/3 of the kitchen ceiling on the kitchen floor. Fortunately, I did not land on the kitchen floor. Unfortunately, it was because I landed across the middle of my back where my foot should have trod. I'm now lying in the ceiling cavity in terrible pain. My 14-year-old son had been in the lounge for all of this watching television. He was not a boy who did much voluntarily in the house. But hearing the noise, the curiosity drove him. So he came into the kitchen, looked up through the gaping hole on the falling dust, and just said, Dad, you're an idiot. Well, every instinct in me said that what I should do now is give this boy a giant lecture about how he couldn't speak to his father like that. And couldn't he see I was in pain up here? And perhaps if he'd been here helping me instead of watching that stupid television, this wouldn't have happened, because you always want to blame the kid. But this time I didn't. I just said, mate, I know I am. He says, right, Dad, I'll fix it. So he went and got dustpan and brush, began to sweep up the mess and pick up bits of plaster until he realised there was still a far more pressing problem up in the ceiling. So he climbed the ladder and helped me down. And for the next 2 hours, he and his wounded father worked to clean the mess in the kitchen. In spite of my pain, I had to work cleaning the mess in the kitchen because my wife had told me not to go in the ceiling. The reason I tell you the story was, in the midst of all of this, my 14-year-old boy began to discuss things with me that had obviously been percolating away inside of him some time. Things that were important for him to discuss. What made it particularly significant was in the 3 months before this, on at least two occasions, he'd been to seminars like this one, and he'd come along with me for the ride, and he'd watch me talking to parents, and he'd been there handing out stuff at the back. On three other occasions, he'd sat in audiences of up to 1,000 teenagers and laughed with them at his silly dad up on the stage. Driving home from those events where I was strong created a discussion about nothing except trivialities and arguments about which station to which the radio should be tuned. He was not comfortable opening himself up with me strong. He was much more comfortable opening himself up with me weak. To the point where even today at 22, if he's got something really important to discuss with me, he'll often preface by saying, "Dad, you know when you fell through the ceiling?"